Welcome to Pomegranate Health. This is an appendix to episode 30 about well-being and relationships in the medical profession. The interview outtakes feature cardiologist Jeff Toogood and GPs Hilton Coppy and Margaret Kay, who is medical director of the Queensland Doctors Health Program. Please see the website at racp.edu.au/pomcast for the published episode and other information.
Stresses of being a doctor. We've heard plenty of shocking statistics over the years about rates of burnout and depression and suicide. From what you've seen in your colleagues and in your counselling, how slippery is that slope?
Well, it's probably at the steep end. It's pretty slippery, but most people aren't on that slippery part of the slope. Most people are way, way, way back. And my main interest has been in helping people stay on the smoother part of the curve and not get on the steep part of the curve. So I just believe that there hasn't been enough emphasis on helping doctors to stay as happy as what they can be in their work to keep them off the dangerous part. I guess the analogy is it's like focusing on the treatment of lung cancer and not doing anything about helping people to never start smoking in the first place. There's the middle ground in getting people to stop smoking, but if all the emphasis goes into that end bits, there's still going to be problems. It's like any public health measure, it requires a range of things and input at a whole lot of different levels that's going to be important for people at different levels of training, different work environments, different personalities, different stages of their lives.
And you've written a series of articles in the AFP about how to treat other doctors, how seeing other doctors as patients. You know, often doctors are afraid to see colleagues or don't have the time or they'll self-diagnose. What advice do you give about, you know, being a good doctor to one's colleagues?
So the background for that was that all the learned bodies and learned organisations in medicine say it's important for doctors not to treat themselves and to seek medical care in the same way as regular people do. And there's also has been an acknowledgement that treating other doctors as patients can be difficult and challenging. But there had been very little written at that stage about, well, yes, it's difficult, but there are things that can be done to make treating other doctors easier or more effective. So that was like the rationale for writing those articles and running the workshops on how to be a doctor for other doctors. But in answering your question, what do I suggest is if I had to put it in one sentence, it would be if the patient is a doctor, is to practice your normal practice as much as you can, but perhaps being a little bit more transparent or open in explaining why things are being done. So we spoke about it at the Australasian Doctors Health Conference recently about using the expression when the patient is a doctor, it is my normal practice to do blah, 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 whatever it is. So it is my normal practice when I ask someone to have some blood tests to ask them to come back to get the results. That's my normal practice and I would like to do that with you too. So that the patient doctor gets a sense they're being treated like in the normal kind of a way, and it helps the treating doctor to make sure that they are not cutting corners and doing their normal good practice.
And just going back to that idea of perfection, aspiring to perfection, and then the burden one feels when that perfection isn't reached, you think there's a place for a more corporate responsibility of medical errors rather than blaming the individual? I mean, we know they're going to happen in a certain proportion. We know there are sometimes systemic reasons that make them more likely to happen. Can hospitals and practices take on some of that medico-legal responsibility?
Yeah, exactly. And so it is about good systems, and that's about having good follow-up and helping people to feel comfortable that they can come back if they're not getting better, and so that if things aren't going according to plan, like there's always a plan B that's in place that people know about. So they are kind of system things and part of being thorough.
The simple answer is yes. This concept of doing root cause analysis needs to be completely revised, because the way it's approached in most hospital systems is in a simplistic linear manner, and a root cause analysis finds a root cause. It's not the way to do it. There's a lot of work that's been done overseas in small parts of Australia where we're actually looking at resilient healthcare systems and actually enabling the complexity around medical error to be identified and actually addressed more effectively. That would actually be the cost-effective way to deal with things. So again, we're looking at health economics. Doing root cause analysis just paralyzes systems, people, increases the medico-legal issues. Similarly, when an error has been made, patients need to know, patients need to be spoken to, and there needs to be expertise in every large system to enable that communication to be done appropriately. And most patients want to know what's going on and actually appreciate being engaged with that conversation, even when it's been a devastating error.
And another example of the bravado comes from Charlotte Chambers of the ASMS, who previously presented a talk titled "Superheroes Don't Take Sick Leave," and the insinuation is that if you don't come in because you're sick, you're letting down your patients and dumping on your colleagues. Is that a legitimate perception, or can the problem be dealt with systematically?
Look, of course it can be dealt with systematically, but you have to dedicatedly address those issues. You can't just hope that sick leave is taken, and that seems to be something that's been happening for, again, decades. Doctors are well known to suffer from what we call presenteeism, and everyone gets sick sometimes during the year. So that means that they're actually attending work when they're actually potentially even infectious. And if the hospital could actually just get their head around how to enable sick leave to be taken more effectively, but to address it, certainly with increased numbers of potential workforce, that would seem to be a way.
Well, we keep hearing how there's such a glut of trainees now. I would have thought that finding casual cover would be pretty easy.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree with you, and I've heard many arguments as to why this can't happen. I would like to hear some arguments as to how it can happen. And I have no doubt that it will happen, because it has come up time and again in recent discussions around the health of doctors to the extreme, as you introduced this discussion, that people sometimes just need to have some time off. And if we could actually enable that without the frown.
Australasian Doctors Health Conference, Michael Robertson of the University of Sydney School of Public Health said that in 44% cases of mandatory reports made, no further action was taken. In 30% of cases, the doctors agreed to sit out when the concerns were raised until they'd addressed their health conditions or whatever. So it was only in a quarter of cases where actually the process led to a more serious medico-legal consequence, and he suggested that the codes of professionalism should be enough to encourage reporting and self-reporting without having to mandate it.
Most times the impairment in practice is not actually identifiable by a treating doctor anyway. I think we have to really understand that, you know, the treating doctor is not standing side by side watching that doctor perform. So the professional practice problems are usually by a peer. So I think, you know, reporting in the workplace is a completely different issue. And clearly we have a responsibility to report things that are considered, inappropriate practice. And we need to make sure and maintain the safety of all patients. I have absolutely no doubt that doctors understand that responsibility and practice that responsibility by professionally reporting people when it's necessary. But most times, a proper conversation with a doctor will help the doctor identify their own concerns and they can self-report. And in fact, there was a lovely study done with the GMC, so that's the medical, sort of the medical board equivalent in the UK, and they actually talked to doctors who had been part of the regulatory system, who had been impaired and who had, you know, had significant problems. And they, you know, the doctors basically reported that they actually valued the regulatory system. I think it's often seen as an adversarial thing. Doctors don't like that regulation, but that is so not the case. Doctors value the regulation. They know that it's there for a purpose and they're there for the health of the community, and they value the fact that that is another protection. So it's not about not having regulation, but it's about having a sensible balance to enable confidential healthcare for all people, and that includes doctors. I think it's very clear that one of the advantages that medicine has always offered until recently has been actually the fact that you could jump from one specialty to another if you decided you wanted to, one pathway to another. So one of my friends, he actually did medicine some years ago, and he actually graduated and became a GP. He was a great GP, but then he realised, unfortunately, that he had a hereditary condition in which he was going to become profoundly deaf and for which there was no cure at that time. So he managed with some fairly, what we would not think of sophisticated technologies for a period of time, but in those days it was sophisticated, and he then did pathology. And he then found his own little space in pathology as a pathologist where he didn't have to actually rely on his hearing to communicate with patients. And then an operation was discovered, and he had this operation that could actually make his hearing restored. And he thrived always on his clinical practice, and he immediately retrained as a physician. And he then continued his life as a physician. So he'd gone from GP to pathologist to physician, all because of health issues. Health issues that changed his pathway, health issues that did not stymie his pathway. And he thrived and benefited from each of those understandings. So we don't really make that easy for people these days. It used to be easier.